When the world first met Iggy Pop in 1969, he just wanted to be our dog. Now the punk innovator and death-defying frontman has been crowned the king of the dogs. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Today, Iggy Pop talks about finding inspiration in the sound of New Orleans, French chanson, and an acclaimed novel. And later, live music in our studio from the Brooklyn-based Baroque pop act, Elizabeth and the Catapult. But to begin, Iggy Pop is often cited as one of the most influential figures in rock. In the late 60s and 70s, he laid the groundwork for punk and new wave with his band The Stooges. As a solo artist and intimidating live performer, he created a sort of template that rock frontmen and women have used for the last 30 years. But on his new album, this influential artist is being influenced by jazz and French literature. The record is called Préliminaire, and it brings Iggy Pop to our Soundcheck studio. I hope I got my French right there.
Yeah, it's very good. Yes, Préliminaire.
So this record, I mean, it sounds like, I mean, people have made comparisons to Tom Waits, but to me, it's kind of the Serge Gainsbourg sound, which...
I don't know who else it sounds like. It's just anybody else who recorded a New Orleans style song in that particular. It's genre correct, that track. So it could be Dr. John too.
Right,
you know?
Right. Well, but Serge Gainsbourg, this famous French songwriter, chansonnier, you know, a lot of his songs were about, you know, the ladies.
Oh, I mean,
it was like,
yes.
You know, for all that you might have occupied sonically different parts of the spectrum.
I love, he has a lovely one, La Javanaise. Amour. And he's just singing, Amour. You know, and you couldn't get away with that in English right now. Love. You know, the Beatles were really the last ones to pound the stake into that particular subject, you know. All right, we got it. All you need is love. Okay. You know?
On to being a dog,
yes.
And searching and destroying and all the rest.
Yes.
So why now take this turn towards jazz and French chanson?
From the early 60s, I'd always had an ear out for the New Orleans style of early rock and roll, which lost out to the St. Louis, Memphis style early rock and roll because of the instrumentation. So the New Orleans style, you had songs by Ernie K. Doe, like Oop Oop Adoo, Fats Domino, Blue Monday, for instance, Walking in New Orleans. You had The Showmen with It Will Stand. You had all this coming out of it was a pushing, pulling, a really, really advanced, very sexy, rhythmic sort of a figure that was used, a loping gait.
Mm-hmm.
And then, on the other hand, you had stuff based on guitar blues, which Chuck Berry codified to finally be da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and then everything took off in the guitar way because... They were just easier to master and easier to get to the gig. So like a lot of people, I knew a guitar player, but I didn't know a baritone sax player, and I couldn't lug around a piano. So I went in that direction, but I'd always loved that music. And
so if you had, as a 19-year-old, you'd had access to a brass band, would the Stooges have sounded like that?
If I could have gotten away with it. I never would have gotten into rock as we know it. The first when I put down my drumsticks, I'd been a drummer for in rock and blues bands for a while. I wanted to do something very creative, and I approached Ron and Scott about starting a band for the fellas in the Stooges. We weren't the Stooges yet,
right?
And
Ron and Scott Ashton.
My first pieces were written. They were little rock operettas written on a Farfisa keyboard, which I played cross-legged in robes on the floor. And I remember one had a, you know, it was about a guy who lived in a cabin in the woods with a pet mouse. And I learned quickly that that wasn't going to get me. That wasn't going to get my shoe in the door, you know. So I, somewhere along the line, what I came up with is part, things that I really felt from the inside, and then what you do, you look at what people want, And if you're artistically true to yourself, you create a bitter version of that.
Bitter version.
Yeah, you don't give them. You give them. You say, "All right, that's what you want. You asked for it." you give them a monster. You know. So there's some of that. You know. There's some of that involved.
Well,
we all live in society.
In the case of early Iggy and the Stooges, there were monsters aplenty populating those records. I mentioned the song Search and Destroy. I mean, I think this will actually give us a kind of a neat setup for the current incarnation of Iggy Pop. This is classic Iggy and the Stooges.
I'm a ski-walking cheetah with a hat full of napalm. I'm a runaway son of a nuclear A-bomb. The world's forgotten boy, the one who searches and destroys. Somebody gotta help me, please. Somebody gotta save my soul. Baby, detonate for me. Ow! Look out, honey, 'cause I'm using technology.
Search and Destroy. Iggy Pop is my guest on Soundcheck. So was this a bitter version of the Beatles?
Yeah, you could put it that way. I mean, the last number on the last song on the album, Raw Power, on which this appears, is called Death Trip. And if you listen to the lyric, I mean, I knew what was going to happen to us. I knew we were going to get, you know, crucified and straight to the... Well, there weren't dumpsters at that time, really, but...
The cutout bin, the record
store.
We
were going straight to the cutout bin with this, and I knew that. But I also knew that, you know, I had faith in humanity. And ultimately, I thought, I knew how good it was. I knew it was of immortal quality, or this spurious immortality that we create through our artistic pursuits, which is what it's all about.
Awfully optimistic.
I just didn't know.
For such a bitter young man.
Yeah, well, I didn't think. Geez, why wait 40 years, people? You know?
Right. Yeah. Well, now you waited 40 years to do, you know, to go back to some of, as you were saying, some of the music that was really important to you early on. Why?
To release my inner Continental.
Yes.
Well, it took a while for me to have the goods. For one thing, I can carry a tune better than I could when I was that age, and I've got more bottom on my voice, so I have different. I don't have the high end energy to. If I tried to write and record something like Search and Destroy right now, it wouldn't be as good. But I can go out and play it live and do it better than anybody else. So I'm what you got, if you want to hear that one, you know.
So the album, Preliminaire, it begins with a song made famous by Edith Piaf.
I always loved the song, Autumn Leaves. I never knew the American lyric in which the drifting autumn leaves are a metaphor for the nostalgia of an old love and youth and all that sort of thing. It's an adaptation. Mm-hmm. The French lyric is called Dead Leaves.
Right. Way more.
Yeah, way more, baby. And it's just more, it's direct, and it's just basically saying what you hear me say in French is, look, this is an old story that everybody's lived. I loved you. You loved me. We did everything together. And somehow, as always, life has separated lovers and... as the tide comes in, when the wave goes out, the people are floundering, disunited.
It's a remarkable song and
strong lyric.
It really is. Let's hear first this classic version from Edith Piaf, and then we'll hear what Iggy Pop has done with it.
C'est une chanson qui ressemble.
C'est une chanson qui nous ressemblait. Toi, tu m'aimais, et je t'aimais. Nous vivions tous les deux ensemble. Toi qui m'aimais, moi qui t'aimais. Mais la vie séparait ceux qui s'aimaient.
A little bit of the album Préliminaire. Foreplay would be a translation of that French.
It's a pun there, so right. It also has the formal meaning, but yeah, in popular parlance, it means foreplay.
Do you see this album as, you know, a foreshadowing of other things that you'd still like to do?
Exactly.
And what would those things be?
Absolutely. Well, there's always, there are Christmas songs, for example. I just said that.
You know, when the film director John Waters right. did his Christmas record, that was genius.
All right.
I can't imagine.
You want me to stay away? Right. Please. It's what I do around the house for fun. Right now I'm learning 5 different Book of White songs because I love them. So, you know, in general, some intimate music that I can carry into my life without going through the deafening and deadening apparatus of basically big industry.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best way I can put it. The thing you just heard me doing. The reason that I got to the melody later track. And the reason I didn't do it at first was because that song, that beautiful song, had become such an industry that it became known for its parts. In other words, you just say "Autumn Leaves" to somebody automatically. If they're from New Mexico, they probably heard it in a hotel bar with tinkling piano, the Roger Williams style from the 50s. And it becomes reduced to its melody. So I wanted to try to take it back to. What are we saying here? What are we saying? And that's why, in this part of my life at least, I really want to make room for some music that I can make for myself or whoever's around, somewhat more organically, as befits my stage in the game.
And you mentioned, you know, the deafening machine of the music industry. You're not going to lose any hearing singing Autumn Leaves.
Well, yeah, and it's also, you know, deafening to the point. Look, even with, you take the history of the electric guitar and, bluesy players in the 50s plugged into a little amp, and it brought a secret spirit. A ghost popped up, a little god, if you will. To what they had to say. Then in the 60s and 70s, in came the Marshalls. And depending on the sensitivity of the player, those amps...
I should just say the Marshall amps, not like fire marshals coming
walls,
in. Or...
Walls of amplifiers, and the player could emote and make those amps say things. And in the Stooges, we did a lot of that. We didn't have the skill to be Ravi Shankar, but you could get 19 semitones through a Marshall just by hitting it a certain way. Then it got to the point in the new age, by the 90s, all you had to do is step on a pedal.
Mm-hmm.
And that determined, at that point, it didn't matter the character of your fingers, your feel, your attack. It became no longer a personal expression. It became a fashion choice. Which settings am I going to use? And it became like somebody, which clothes am I going to wear? Okay, still kind of interesting for most people, not me anymore. Now, why bother to play one when you can, there are programs you can just put in an Apple computer, right? and just press it, you know, and it's now just a tool. But it's not going to give me what I want as a musician out of music, which is, and I think there are a lot of people who who have a human part which is not getting fed. I just kind of smelled that. Yeah. My dog sighed or whatever. I thought, well, maybe somebody else would like this stuff besides me. So that's why I put it out.
We're speaking with Iggy Pop. The album is out. It's called Preliminaire. And Iggy Pop is talking with New York Times jazz critic Ben Ratliff tonight at the Times Center on West 41st Street at 6:30. And, of course, speaking with us here in our studio this afternoon on Soundcheck. Is that why you've gone largely acoustic on this record? You know, the electric instruments, it's all become kind of a series of black boxes, cookie cutter stuff.
Well, that's part of it, and then you know the other part of it is that I've been out, I've been working nonstop for 6 years now with one of the great electric bands, which is the Stooges. But that's also, it's like getting beat up by a middle-aged street gang every night. One critic said that's how he felt when he walked out of our show.
Did he mean that in a good way?
And I said, you know, that's how I feel, too. Well, you know, you do. It's like being administered a beating by some old overweight mafia guys from Jersey. So I needed a break also. I was doing this music bit by bit on my downtime.
Mm-hmm. You know. Iggy Pop with us in our Soundcheck studio. So you've been doing this music. You did Autumn Leaves in French. You did the Brazilian song, the Jobim song, How Insensitive. You chose to do that in English.
Yes. I haven't got Portuguese yet.
Okay. But the French, now, a lot of the kind of French flavor of this album comes from this novel.
Michel Welbeck wrote a novel. I'd heard about Michel through the grapevine of outrage, if you will. I read a terribly outraged piece by a female journalist who'd gone to interview him, and he had a few drinks, I suppose, that day, and suggested that would she like to have sex with him? How unprofessional, this monster, you know. And she went into great detail to describe how unappetizing that idea was to her, and about his disheveled, semi-bald head, and so on and on and on. And I thought, I got to check this guy out, you know. I understood, and I felt bad for him, actually, in a way, at that point, because been there, done that, not that particular thing, but 30 years before, thought that I was with a human being when I was actually with a journalist machine, you know. Mm-hmm. Difference. You know, is we all sort of have to carry our armor into public life. But anyway, I became curious, and I bought a novel. It was just very, very, very good. The Possibility of an Island. Sci-fi with soul.
In the sense that Philip K. Dick is sci-fi.
Yes, exactly. A lot of humor. Film noir, Raymond Chandler sci-fi. So that nothing happened for about a year, except that I felt better having read the book. I felt a lot of complicity with the protagonist in the book, who's a middle-aged comic who's saved up some loot and wants to get out of Dodge. And he makes the mistake of trying to do so, and his life falls apart in a retirement zone on the Spanish coast. But he is saved. He's reborn through technology because a cult has taken a bit of his DNA, and they choose him after his death. After his death by suicide, he's chosen as the perfect clone father. So he spawns many, many generations of neo-humans who, to survive on a desiccated and ruined planet, must of necessity moderate their desires. Everyone lives in a guarded, gated, electronically protected area. Everything is room service. One beautiful part in the book is the cloning's done as a manufacturing technique rather than using birth techniques. Mm-hmm. So you're born at 18, you've got till you're 50. So, which of course would solve a lot of budgetary problems for the governments of the world.
It's a little bit of a draconian measure, but
yeah,
that might work.
So anyway, I read this book. Nothing happened for a year, and later, some French-speaking filmmakers in Holland were making a documentary about him and his cultural moment. They approached me for some music for it. So that's how that this began with that project. I thought I'd give him two acoustic pieces and take the Euros, you know. But then I got so excited about it, I said, you know, hey, I've got an album budget here and no record company. Cool. I didn't even meet... I never laid eyes on the producer or the musicians during the entire process. I wrote this, which really helped, because mentally I developed this image of the musicians as broken down elder super figures, you know. With, you know, I pictured the clarinet player with the oily remains of a greasy quiff and a shirt with cigarette burns, you know.
It was a soundtrack not just to a book but to your idea of the making of the album.
And what I was doing. Sorry, go ahead.
This actually you're reading from the book here.
I'm reading from the book. Yeah.
This is from Iggy Pop and the album Preliminaire.
Died just after sunset. I was stretched out on the bed when he approached and tried painfully to jump up. He wagged his tail nervously. Since the beginning, he hadn't touched his bowl once. He had lost a lot of weight. I helped him to settle on my lap. For a few seconds, he looked at me with a curious mixture of exhaustion and apology. Then,
in a moment, more of our conversation with Iggy Pop, who's here with me in the studio. And after he leaves, the indie pop trio Elizabeth and the Catapult comes in with some additional musicians in tow. They'll share their new album, which includes a song about the crisis on Wall Street. You won't want to miss that. That's Soundcheck.
We're all just all the children. We're all just all the children. We're all just all the children.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Iggy Pop is my guest on the program today. The punk godfather and leader of the Stooges is talking about his new solo album with the French title Preliminaire, inspired by this French novel called The Possibility of an Island by author Michel Houellebecq. Iggy Pop even sings in French on the tracks that open and close the record, which are the same track. They're two versions of Autumn Leaves. This song appears twice on the record, too.
Yes.
Here as She's a Business, and then elsewhere as a French song with French vocals overlaid on top. Why do that?
Something important in the book and that runs through a lot of Houellebecq's work apparently, is his skepticism about the possibility of good relations between men and women in our society, and his protagonist has a lot of problems with women. I wrote She's a Business based on a certain part in the book where he has a much younger girlfriend, and at some point he is ready to relax and enjoy his money in the south of Spain, but she's talented and, as it happens in the book, needs to go to Hollywood to appear in a movie with Robert De Niro and take piano lessons, so because she's also a talented musician. So she's just very practical, more practical. He's in a point where he wants to dream. Men are often, a lot of men are that way anyway. A lot of women are a little more practical about things, and so I wanted to mention that in one of the songs. So there was that, and then having done that track, there was an opportunity for Lucy Amy, who is the wife of Hal Craig and who produced the album, and who she's French, and she had read the book, and we decided to try a song in which she sang over that track and replied to everything Welbeck says about women. So it was basically her chance to give the other side.
This was the equal time doctrine.
Yes, the equal time. And originally I wanted to put my version where hers is and her version later, but hers just sounded good with that French vocal. It sounded cool. It reminded me of the Gainsbourg Je t'aime moi je t'aime non plus. So Hal twisted my arm and we stuck hers up there first.
The album is called Preliminaire, and once again, Iggy Pop is speaking with New York Times jazz critic Ben Ratliff tonight at the Times Center on West 41st Street at 6:30 p.m. I asked you before, you know, Preliminaire can mean foreplay. Is this a foreshadowing of things to come? What would you like to do next? I mean, the Stooges still?
I will do some things most likely with Iggy and the Stooges. The Stooges is over.
With
Ron's passing, and but there is Iggy and the Stooges, which was James, Ron, Scott, and myself. James and Scott will be rehearsing in August somewhere with Mike Watt and Steve McKay.
Wow!
Yeah, to get a repertoire together, and I plan to make myself available to them next year for something. So there's that, but not a ton of it. You know, well, not 92 dates to the end of my existence sort of thing. But other than that, I'm just kind of reacting these days. I don't have a lot that I'm dying to say to anybody. I just like to react.
Well, you spent a lot of time saying things, and recent years reacting has gotten you this new record.
Yeah.
Which, you know, for all that people are saying, oh, it's completely different, there are elements of rock on this. And, I mean, there are things that people who've been paying attention would have heard inklings of some of this stuff in your career over the years. But the song Nice to Be Dead, it seems to be you saying, you know what, I can still rock with the best stuff.
Yeah, a little bit. It wasn't written this way. It was written as a dirge on acoustic guitar, and the producer said, come on. Come on, do one, dude. So, all right, we'll do one.
All right, this is Nice to Be Dead. It's from the album Preliminaire. My guest has been Iggy Pop. Really a pleasure having you with us on Soundcheck today.
Thanks very much. All right, so long.
Nice to be understood. No need for being good. That's nice.
Still to come, indie pop from the trio Elizabeth and the Catapult, somewhat augmented trio, and using the financial crisis as musical inspiration. Tomorrow on the show, part two of our interview with Yusuf Islam, formerly known as Cat Stevens. We're back in 60 seconds.
God is God.